I'm going to call the remote hearing of the House Human Services Finance and Policy Committee to order. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everybody. So today we are going to hear three bills being presented. All three bills will be held over for possible inclusion in the House Finance bill. But first, let's take the roll call attendance. Ms. Hansen.
Good morning, everyone. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Morning, present.
Thank you. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Liebling. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Noor. Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Thank you, members.
Okay, members, we have a quorum. Representative Frederick, would you like to move the minutes from February 3rd?
Chair, so moved.
Thank you. So Representative Frederick moves the minutes from February 3rd, 2021. Any discussion or corrections? Okay, hearing none, those in favor say aye. Please unmute yourself. Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. The minutes for February 3rd, 2021 are approved. Before we start the bills, we need to make a, I'm gonna make a motion to re-refer a bill. This is Representative Fisher's bill, House File 566. So the motion is to re-refer House File 566 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee without recommendations. Representative Fisher, would you like to just to say a few words about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Schultz. This is a bill that has to do with landlords, tenant rentals, and the what the definition of a service animal is, something that's really not in this purview of this committee. I had talked to staff, and it was an error in when they were sending the bills to committees, it was an error that was made on that side.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, we had this same conversation a couple of days ago, and I certainly respect the opinion of Mr. McCormick on this, but we are all about process, and Mr. Representative Fisher, ordinarily, you would have risen on the floor of the House and made that same dissertation to a motion to re-refer from the chair or the presiding officer. So, Madam Chair, I just want to understand if this is going to become commonplace for a committee to re-refer without recommendation to another non-related committee, or are we going to revert back at some point to the normal process of asking for the redirect from the presiding officer in the House floor? It's only 5 hours away from when we do that, so I'm curious as to why we need to take this action now.
I think we want to make sure that we get bills moving to the right committee, the appropriate committee, as efficiently as possible and in a timely manner, given that we're meeting remotely and our staff are already under a lot of stress. So this was a mistake. It should have been referred to Judiciary and Civil Law. We're correcting that mistake. This is a very common practice to re-refer in committee. We send the report to the floor and we take action on the floor of the House. And we did get information from Mr. McCormick about this process. I'm very comfortable with it. So that is my motion, and I'm happy to put it to a voice vote right now. I'm sorry, I think it needs it's going to have a roll call vote. So Representative Albright, if you're not comfortable with this process, feel free to vote no on this motion to re-refer it to Judiciary Any other questions from members? Okay, with that, Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll, please?
Absolutely. Chair Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
No.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, no.
Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Knorr?
Knorr, aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative Pearson? I'll come back to you, Representative Pearson. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
No.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins?
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Aye. Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, no.
That's 11 ayes and 8 nays, Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. The motion is approved. The next item, we are going to hear House File 21, Representative Hassan. These bills have to do with appropriations for emergency shelters and to address homelessness. First, we need to take action to approve the division report from the Preventing Homelessness Division. So my motion is to approve the division report, and we will be taking a voice vote. So please unmute yourself, and then we can take up the bill. So all those in favor of the motion to approve the division report, Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have not handled a division report in this committee yet this biennium. I think it would be helpful for all of the members, particularly those of the variety that have not served on this and seen this action taken before, if you could spend 30 seconds and just explain what the division report states and why we're taking this action.
Thank you, Representative Albright. So we have divisions under our committee. We have Preventing Homelessness and the Behavioral Health Division. These are divisions we created, the leadership created, to do work on policy on the bills. Since this is a finance and policy committee, these divisions only handle policy issues, and if they have appropriations or expenses, they come to our committee for approval, for review. So this is a division report. The bills were heard in Aisha Chair Gomez's committee, and they're put into a report, and the report is sent up to our committee because these are divisions of our committee. So this is the process, how we handle these bills when we're structured this way, and I believe we also had this very similar structure in committee's last session as well. So returning members should be familiar with it. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just would add, since you paused here, it's really not proper to interrupt a roll call, a vote that's being conducted, especially just to ask for some kind of thing like this. So, you know, I mean, procedure's great in committee, and, you know, ultimately, I think the chair needs to have the latitude to be able to, you know, ask for a procedural vote. This could have been explained after the vote, and I just wanted to flag that. Interrupting a vote in progress to make this kind of comment, I think, is a little bit out of line, frankly.
We're going to proceed to the vote, members, so please unmute yourself. This can be a voice vote. So all in favor to adopt the division report from Preventing Homelessness Division, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion is adopted. On to House File 21, Representative Hassan. I'll make the motion to move House File 21. It's now before the committee, and Representative, I'll make the motion to move House File 21, and remember, the action is to lay this over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. Representative Hassan, I see there's an amendment. Do you want to describe the bill and take testimony before we move to the amendment?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Please present your bill and introduce yourself to the committee. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Representative Hodan Hassan. Thank you for taking House File 21, the Emergency Shelter Housing Funding Proposal. The purpose of this legislation is to help address a large gap around the state in emergency housing for those who are unhoused. As you may recall from the past couple of years, the lack of temporary shelter has hit unhoused Minnesotans hard in a high profile way. In 2018, more than 200 people created a small tent city in Minneapolis and called the Wall of Forgotten Natives to draw attention to this serious problem. November of 2019, a public housing apartment fire in Minneapolis City, the Riverside neighborhood, killed 5 people and left many families homeless and in need of shelter. Followed by the Drake Hotel, this temporary shelter was seriously damaged by fire in the early morning of Christmas of 2019 by putting 250 people and dozens of families out in the cold street. 2020 has been a year filled with uncertainty. The pandemic has exacerbated our inequities and highlighted our systemic flaws. When the governor ordered shelter in place, there were plenty of our community members who didn't have a place to stay. After the murder of George Floyd, followed by the civil unrest, we had a large group of unhoused folks staying at Powderhorn Park. At one point, we had almost all of our Minneapolis parks occupied by unhoused folks. And sadly, Madam Chair and members, this is the tip of the iceberg. Being homeless and needing a shelter is not a Minneapolis problem. It's not a metro problem. It's a Minnesota problem. We have seen housing crisis increase and rise for the past 10 years, and I believe there has been some work done, but there hasn't been much done to put this problem to rest. This problem is urgent, and the need is in communities big and small across the state. And this proposal, we're asking a one-time appropriation of $25 million to increase the supply and improve the conditions of emergency shelters. And with that, I have a couple testifiers who are going to share some personal stories and other members from the community who are doing some great work around emergency shelters.
We also have Assistant Commissioner Tenbrook with us. Did you want Assistant Commissioner to present the background information before we go to your testifiers?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Assistant Commissioner Tenbrook, if you want to introduce yourself to the committee and then proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm Kathy Tenbrook. I'm an assistant commissioner at Minnesota Housing and the executive director of our state's Interagency Council on Homelessness, which is a cabinet-level body focused on this work of preventing and ending homelessness across our state. The bills before you today, both from Representative Hassan and Representative Howard, are talking about really important gaps that we see in our homelessness response system. Always, every day of the year, homelessness is an urgent issue in our communities, but never has the response been so critically urgent as it has been this past year during COVID. People experiencing homelessness are highly vulnerable to negative impacts of COVID because of their age, because of often multiple underlying health conditions, and also because of the very settings in which so many people experiencing homelessness need to live in more congregate, crowded locations. Just for a little bit of level setting as well, I did want to share, every year we do a point in time count, which tries to enumerate the number of people experiencing homelessness across our state. It is a minimum count for sure, but the very last count we have identified about 8,000 Minnesotans experiencing homelessness just on one night throughout the state. About half of all people counted are members of families on the night of the survey, with their families. And I also wanted to make the point that Representative Hassan also just made, which is that about 34% of everybody identified experiencing homelessness were identified in greater Minnesota. So certainly not a metro issue alone, but a statewide issue. During this time of COVID, all the data has shown and really underscored the vulnerability of people experiencing homelessness. During the pandemic, the rates of hospitalization and ICU for those who become COVID positive have been much, much higher than the general population of people who become COVID positive. And in fact, people experiencing homelessness that did get COVID were 7 times more likely to end up in the ICU. It's also really important to note the inequity of who experiences homelessness. One example being that American Indians are 27 times more likely to be homeless than white Minnesotans, and they are 31 times more likely to be experiencing homelessness outside, so even without shelter at all. And when COVID hit in March, it was really important that we at the state, but in partnership with our local partners all across the state, local governments and nonprofits, responded quickly to make sure we could protect people experiencing homelessness who were most vulnerable to these outcomes. And so we worked very swiftly with the federal and state resources that we were able to harness to work with our partners to create over 2,800 temporary shelter options, mostly in the motel-hotel industry. And we also were covering staffing and food support and the important protective equipment that staff and people needed to protect themselves. We contracted with hotels, staffing agencies, and food support organizations to create isolation spaces. So these were specifically for people who were COVID positive, but did not need hospitalization or were waiting their test results, someplace safe for them to be for a short period of time while they recovered from the disease. We partnered with local governments and nonprofits to create some additional spaces to bring people inside from encampments and other locations outside, and invested in our housing support program at DHS to provide those settings with the COVID-safe resources to be COVID-safe and follow federal and state health guidance, and also to create a hotel-to-home model to bring people who were in some of those hotels towards permanent housing as well. The need for these spaces that we've stood up and the response that we've had is still very great. As I know you all know, federal funding through the CARES Act has been mostly committed or has been depleted. And certainly the first tranche of the coronavirus relief funds that we received in Minnesota all expired at the end of 2020. And just to be really clear, the recent federal stimulus that came to support the work on COVID, while enormously important and critical for testing and vaccine work and all that's happening there, did not include anything specific for shelter or people experiencing homelessness or to support people who are outside during the pandemic. So we just need to work to sustain the important system that we put into place. So in these bills combined, there are really kind of 3 legs of a stool that we are enthusiastic about seeing supported. One is, you know, sustaining our emergency services program at DHS to make sure that we can continue the shelter staffing, hygiene, PPE, bolstering our housing support settings so that they can continue to comply with COVID-safe protocols, and then sustaining those existing isolation spaces as well. My last note, and just wanted to make sure people were aware that the governor has also proposed critical investments to address homelessness in the budget, in his budget address. This includes ongoing investments in the emergency services program, but also additional funding for counties and tribes to support integrating housing services in their human services work, and stable funding for our homeless management information system, which is our data system that we use to really focus and drive and be strategic with resources and drive results in all the work that we do. So with that, Madam Chair, that is the background I wanted to provide. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. We so appreciate everything you're doing. It's really appalling that in our society, we allow people to be unsheltered and homeless. And I know when I frequented St. Paul before COVID, it was the problem, I think, was becoming more apparent and severe as I took the Green Line. Many places, people were using the Green Line as a shelter. And I hope as a state, we can make significant investments to address homelessness and put more money into providing shelters and moving people out of outside into secure shelter and into homes. So thank you for your work. We really appreciate it. And thank you for highlighting what the agencies have been doing with the counties on securing shelter for those, especially during the COVID pandemic. Representative Hassan, would you like to go to your testifiers and then we can take up the amendment? So the first testifier is Jen Tenneman from Partners for Affordable Housing. Jen Tenneman, if you would like to introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. My name is Jen Tenneman. I'm the Executive Director for Partners for Housing. We're a nonprofit in South Central Minnesota. On behalf of Partners for Housing and the people we serve, I am asking for your strong support of House Files 21, 42, and 315, which would appropriate funding for continued emergency services grants and expansion of emergency shelter space during the COVID pandemic and beyond. Our organization, located in a designated severe cost burdened area, provides emergency shelter, a variety of supportive housing programs, and provides long-term below-market rental units for 31 households every evening. Every day, our staff receives desperate calls from people who are homeless or at significant risk of becoming homeless. This includes singles and families. In fact, 46% of those we serve are children under the age of 18. Every day, our shelters in Mankato and St. Peter have no immediate space available, and we can only add them to the waiting list. Due to COVID-19, we have received funds for hotel vouchers. However, the person still remains homeless, and they're back on the streets days later. For so many years, emergency shelters across the state have been at capacity with no relief. During the pandemic, we've been told that people experiencing homelessness are up to 3 times more likely to contract COVID-19, making them even more vulnerable as health and safety risks are amplified exponentially. A lovely young woman that we housed in our shelter several years ago and now again support in our long-term housing program says this: "When I was pregnant, I was homeless. There was a very long waiting list to get into shelter, and it was very miserable being pregnant, living out of multiple places, in beds in other people's houses, in garages, in cars. I was very uncomfortable, and it was stressful. We need more space to have a shorter waiting list to get into shelters and into housing. Shelters that are appropriately designed, equipped, and staffed can make a significant impact when there is appropriate funding to support the nonprofits running them. This equates to capital funding to expand or build new, renovate to address maintenance issues, or increasing the number of beds. This is certainly the case for our organization. We would welcome the opportunity to serve more people. However, we are currently geographically landlocked and working with buildings that are 75 to 110 years old. We don't have undeveloped land to build on, earmarked funds in the bank to build a new shelter, a development person to run a capital campaign, or a willingness to take out a huge loan to build and hope that operational funding will become available someday. In 2018, we were blessed when a private donor wanting to impact homelessness in our area gifted us a motel in St. Peter in order to convert it into shelter. However, we didn't have the money to operate it. A year and a half later, and through the compilation of 6 competitive grants, we have now have the funds for staffing and utilities to be able to offer 14 sleeping rooms. Through additional grants, we are currently remodeling with volunteer help to create a common area with a kitchen and proper food storage for our guests. While a definite positive, the property is in need of a new roof, all new windows, a parking lot, and much more, and those things will have to wait. This is the difficult journey for nonprofits whose grants are not guaranteed year after year, and the investment in facilities is not available. Our journey became more difficult just yesterday with the news that our supportive housing and administrative staff and interns will be homeless as of July. The building we office out of has been sold and we are being evicted, and comparable rental rates to move elsewhere are 3 to 4 times more than what we're currently paying. Ideally, we would have a large enough shelter where program and administrative staff could be in one place for better client and staff accessibility and efficiency, and really an investment for the long haul. We now are tasked with finding a new home for ourselves. I implore you to support House Files 21, 42, and 315 to provide meaningful support for emergency services grants to support the intensive and impactful case management services, which provides clients a hand up and a place to call home, and to ensure that we can increase the size of shelters like ours to better meet the need. At Partners, we have been working tirelessly for 36 years to protect our most vulnerable guests and provide the resources for our staff to do this critical work. A commitment to fund shelter operations and expansion is an investment not only for my outstate nonprofit working to uphold the South Central region of the state, but also for our partners across the state and really for the health and well-being of our communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Dunneman. We really appreciate all of the work you're doing in this space. Our next testifier is Dave Dunn from the Olmsted County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Director Dunn, if you're here, please introduce yourself to the committee. Welcome, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Dunn. I serve as the housing director for Olmsted County. I have just a very brief slide or two that I would like to share. And of course, when we did this earlier, it worked with flawlessly. So now it'll have some kind of technology glitch because it seems to always happen that way. As I said, my name is Dave Dunn. I'm here this morning as the Olmsted County Housing Director, and really just want to briefly touch base on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Minnesota Counties, and really look at that perspective as we look at this issue and these bills before the committee today. I believe in the packet that you've received some information that tells the story of Rochester and Olmsted County and our collaborative efforts over the course of the pandemic to address this issue. We've done a lot, we've stood up a service center for those experiencing homelessness during the day. We've also, along with that, took our seasonal warming center with help from our partners with Catholic Charities of Southern Minnesota, and were able to expand that season. So we didn't have to have people out in the middle of a pandemic. And we've also recently had to address a COVID outbreak amongst our homeless population here locally. And so what we found with these experiences are really gonna be things that are quite understanding to most of you. And when we talk about this very broadly, what we found is we really do need to build this successful system that has shelter services and ultimately housing. And the House files that you're hearing today really all help us do that. We know we need shelter. Without shelter, that's kind of the beginning of our system. We need a place for people to be safe. We need a place for people to kind of get connected. And that's really where those services come in as well. It's not just enough to have shelter. It's not just enough to have services. We also need housing. And so we really need all three of these pieces of the puzzle working together, a three-legged stool or whatever analogy that you'd like to use. And so for us, I think moving forward, all of these help us build that system that works. finally, in closing, I think just to give you a demonstration of what some of the costs are that we're seeing here in Olmsted County for the different services that we provide. You can see there at the top, your detox is $400 a day. The detention center is $200 a day. Student transportation, so this is for students who are in transition, $60 a day and up. Hotel vouchers are $55 a day. Our shelter costs are right around 40, and rental assistance at the bottom there is 18. And what we'd really hope to do is encourage you as this committee and the House and the legislature in general, let's really focus on those opportunities at the bottom of my screen. And I hear my slides aren't advancing, so I apologize. Because I really want to see if that helps kind of get that last slide on there. Because I think seeing this really helps, and I think it's a good visual for what is important. And as we look at investments in our state, really providing those investments at the bottom of the screen are really what we see as things that make the most sense. And so the three files that you're talking about today all really do that. I could spend a lot more time talking about the specifics in each one and how it impacts Olmsted County and counties across Minnesota. But I encourage you to, if you have any questions, I'll stop from there and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Director Dunn. We appreciate that. And I believe the slide deck is in our portfolio and on our website, so members have that information. Members, I think we'll take questions for the testifier, the author of the bill, or any of the testifiers. So if members have questions, please raise your hand. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hassan and testifiers. $25 million is a lot of money, but with the need we have before us, I can't imagine it's going to satisfy everything we need to be doing. One of the testifiers suggested that there were 8,000 people presently homeless. How will the $24 million be, or $25 million be spent in order to provide them shelter? And for how long may a family or an individual stay in a shelter provided like that? Thank you.
Representative Hassan, would you like to answer that or have one of your testifiers address it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Zach Eaton that's here that can maybe take that question.
Yes, okay, Mr. Eichen, will you introduce yourself for the record and say your affiliation, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Schultz and members of the committee. My name is Zach Eichen. I am the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We are a coalition of more than 100 providers across the state. And I'm happy to be here to answer those questions. Representative Sandell, to your question about the number of days that folks on average stay in short-term housing and shelter settings, the statewide average is 74 days that folks stay in that. And I, if you could repeat your second question as well, that'd be helpful.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wondered how many individuals could be sheltered and how long would they would stay. I live in a, I represent Highway District 53B, which is Woodbury. It's an affluent community. And I think there are, well, I know there are people in our district who would be surprised to know that there are probably 200 families that are homeless. Many of them are doubling up. But it's a big issue, not only in our affluent community. I know, but I spent time in outstate Minnesota, and that it's there as well. My general concern, I guess, is how long are these people able to stay, get their feet under them, and find a way to establish themselves in a more secure and stable environment.
Yes, thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Sandell. That's a great question. And just to give a little bit of background from where MCH sees these issues is the $25 million as proposed here is just one piece of the puzzle. Actually, the identified need that we have been able to identify at the end, late 2019 was actually almost $50 million in ready projects for shelter. So we'll also be coming back with a bill, hopefully with a bonding ask to match this with another $25 million to get to that full need. But to the question of how many more beds would this actually be able to generate with this investment? Through that process of identification of projects, the $25 million would get about half of the beds, and the proposed beds that would be able to be generated here is almost 2,000 beds statewide. And that does, that's almost half and half Greater Minnesota and the Seven County Metro.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Eichten and Representative Hassan, thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill forward. So I guess I had a little bit of a comment and a question all at once. I just wanted to make a brief comment first, and that is that, you know, we talk about this and we take for granted that homelessness is not just an urban issue. I know even in our own community here in Maple Grove, I've had numerous conversations with our chief. We have a homeless population in Maple Grove, which most people think of Maple Grove as being sort of the land of milk and honey, but it is not true. There are certainly people even in our own community living out of their car who don't feel safe. And so I want to bring that point home. And it's important to note that one of those individuals that I've spoken with is a woman who pays her insurance. She pays her taxes. She pays all of her bills. But at the end of the month, she doesn't have enough money to pay her rent. And so she is literally living in her car. And by the grace of God, our local police have been generous enough to allow her to stay in their parking lot and park there safely so that she knows that she has a safe place to be. But my question is this. You mentioned earlier that about half of the individuals that are currently listed on an average night in the state of Minnesota were part of a family unit. And so my question is this. I'm curious about what sort of accommodations we have to help accommodate families in particular who may be in that homeless situation, and any other support services to help them obviously move to a better place, more stable place. And also if you could speak to, you didn't mention it, but I'm curious about the features for women or youth. I know Representative Fisher deals quite a bit with homeless youth, individuals who've been trafficked. And I'm curious what kind of safety measures we have to help with those individuals to be not only housed, but also to feel safe.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Mr. Eichten or the Assistant Commissioner?
Yes, Chair Schultz and Director Tenbrook, you might be able to back me up on some of this, but just for some extra context on the shelter system in general, 80 of our 87 counties currently don't have enough beds to meet the needs of individuals. And for families, that is 73 of our 87 counties do not have enough beds to meet the need for families experiencing homelessness. About 46% of our homeless population is considered youth. So that is about half of the folks who are experiencing homelessness on any given night are youth in our state. So Director Tenbrook might have some more specifics on any of that.
Ms. Tenbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner, for the question. Yeah, Zach, I think answered well in that it really depends on where you are in the state, what the shelter situation or system looks like for you as either a family or an individual. But we do have folks on the call from DHS who could certainly speak to some of the resources that we have at the state through our Homeless Youth Act and that support for homeless youth, if you'd like that level of information as well. I did just want to add that you know, when we talk about trying to create a system statewide in Minnesota that focuses on what it will take to prevent and end homelessness, and Zach mentioned this earlier, we don't just mean that, you know, we are going to create enough shelter so that no one's sleeping outside. We are really trying to create a system that can prevent homelessness whenever possible. But if somebody does become homeless, that there is a safety net where we can quickly work with them, identify folks, and move them on a path towards permanent housing. So everybody recognizing, of course, our partners at MCH and others, that the ultimate goal here is to create housing that will work for youth, for families, for individuals who have very low incomes, and for those who have complicating health factors and other issues in their lives, that those, that housing also has some support services to create long-term stability. So all a part of a very big effort statewide.
Thank you for those responses. Representative Bonner.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that feedback, and certainly any more information you have about how we make sure that we're accommodating families as a part of that grant is certainly something that I would be of great interest to me. Also, I just wanted to mention that, you know, we know, as you mentioned in your presentation, that unfortunately there are a lot of factors around folks who are, find themselves in a homeless situation or unhoused. And I think we also acknowledge that that means greater trips to the emergency room, and that means bills that are often unpaid at hospitals, which in the end ultimately gets back to the taxpayers. And so I think there's a, not only is it the right thing to do for humanity to make sure that we're taking care of these individuals, but also from a state perspective and a budget perspective, I think it's also the right thing to do there as well. Thank you,
Representative Bonner. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm sorry, my internet has been unstable, so I've been in and out since we started this discussion. So if this has already been answered, I'm sorry. But the bill, you know, is very general. Where is this $25 million going to? Is it to specific providers? Is it to DHS? We'll run through a other grant program. Like, I'm just trying to understand, like, we're given $25 million, but there's no detail on how it will be spent. So if someone could just bring me up to speed on that. Sorry.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Mr. Eichten?
Yes, thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Robbins. Thanks for the question. The bill language is, I can pull it up here, starting on 1.16 through 1.17 here, is for short-term housing facilities to increase the supply and improve the condition of shelters for individuals and families without permanent residence. That's pretty broad, I'll admit. But what we're trying to do here with this language and have it be really broad is that we want it to be flexible for local communities and providers to actually use the dollars to meet the need in their local communities. So homelessness in Greater Minnesota doesn't always look the same as it does in the Twin Cities metro area. So folks, for increasing the supply and improve the condition of, as Jen Thieneman said earlier, might mean a new roof. It might mean new windows. It might mean acquiring a building. We know that there are some MCH members who have access or would have access to vacant medical facilities that could serve as shelters, but they need the cash up front to be able to purchase that building. It might mean construction in some cases in counties that don't have a shelter already or a vacant building that could work. So to the question of why is it written so broadly, it's really meant to be a tool that local communities can then provide that really designated and intentional support where it's needed, and giving them the broad enough tools to be able to meet that need across the state.
Thank you for that response. Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so I appreciate that, Mr. Eichten. But I just wondered, so will the money go to cities? Will it go to counties? Will it be done based on population of homelessness in a region? Like, it's so broad that I'm sure, for example, I live in Hennepin County. I'm sure we could use all $25 million, you know? So, like, how is this actually going to work in practice? And what sort of reporting back to the state will there be? So if we know they spent it on windows versus a new roof versus acquiring a building. So could you please help me out on that? Thank you.
Director?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Robbins. My understanding of the language is that it would go to the Department of Economic Opportunity through DHS to be administered through the same department that also administers things like the Emergency Services Program for greater, they're the folks that already work on this, on these issues.
Thank you. And Ms. Robbins, we're going to need to move on so we can get through all the bills.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, just one more thing. That language is not in the bill. I have the bill pulled up on a second screen over here. So if there could be a clarifying amendment adopted to specify that's where the money's going so that we can track who was responsible for making these grants, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
We do get automatic, I mean, when they get grant money, they're required to fill out reports to the agencies. So I sent some information yesterday out about the reporting requirements when grants are distributed through our state agencies. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is kind of in general, so I'm not sure who would answer this, but you know, a lot of times when families become homeless, someone else helps them out. And so while we count them as homeless, I'm guessing this happens maybe, well, I shouldn't assume anything. It happens with families. And so we count them homeless, but in fact, they do have a warm place to live and safety, I'm assuming a lot there, and food. Do we know how many or how much the percentage of people that are living trying to get back on their feet? Because I've seen it successful a few times. Families have been able to split housing, share the cost of maybe the cost of running the house, and then get on their feet and get their own place again. So I'm just wondering, you know, where that's at.
Thank you, Representative Keel. I think this could either go to Assistant Commissioner Tenbrook about the definition of how we define who is homeless or not, or Mr. Eichen.
Yeah, Chair Schultz and Representative Keel, thanks for the question. I'll let Director Tenbrook answer with more specificity in a second here, but based on the 2018 Wilder count, the estimated number of people who are homeless in any given night in Minnesota, not just a point in time count, this is an estimation, is around 20,000 Minnesotans on any given night. A lot of those folks are the folks that we don't capture in the traditional sense in homeless counts. So as soon as you go to a shelter, you get entered into account. But for folks like you're referencing who are underhoused, who are, you know, doubling or tripling up, those are the estimation numbers, and those are the ones that we can't always capture with really accurate data. We do know that folks double up and triple up, and it's not usually a good situation for these folks, because we don't have the resources then going towards getting them back on their feet quicker. So we really want to make sure that we have the support system in place that people feel comfortable going into the system, getting the help, and moving on quicker than if they have to, you know, double or triple up and be under house for a longer period of time.
Assistant Commissioner Tenbrook, do you have anything to add to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keel, I want to make sure I really understood the question exactly. So is the question sort of how do we at the state define who's experiencing homelessness? Is that the right question?
Representative Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say that, but more importantly, how do we define, I know that they're considered homeless. If my adult children moved in with me, they could be considered homeless, even though I have plenty of room for them and we can work it out for a while as they get stable. And there's a lot of that going on, but it concerns me that we're guessing on that number, and I would never assume that that isn't a good situation. I realize that it can be a challenging situation. But I also know that I've seen it happen where people actually become successful because they have that support system behind them, as well as being able to just kind of get whatever it is that they're having trouble with, mental health problems, financial troubles, being able to get themselves uprighted again. So I've seen it help both families out to be able to work. I'm sure it's mostly a family situation, which is going to create COVID problems. I get that you're putting more people in an area. But my question is, how do we count those? It sounds like we just guess. That concerns me.
Commissioner Tenbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keel. Representative Keel, I would say this. There are various definitions depending on funding streams, specifically on how we target resources. So federal funding streams have very specific definitions that need to be followed. State funding streams have other definitions. And so I think what I would assure you is that wherever resources go within us in state agencies, they would align with the program's existing definitions and support. So I, with all due respect, I certainly don't think it would be distributed by guessing, but I do think that it would be distributed by using every, you know, bit of the best information we have to align and make sure that any funding is aligning with definitions that that specific program has identified as the correct definition. So it's a hard one to answer, and I'm sorry for that, but I think it's because different funding streams come with different requirements and definitions, if that's helpful. Okay.
Thank you, Assistant. Okay. We need to move on, Representative Keel. And we can come back, Representative Keel, if we have time. Representative Albright?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a few questions, and then if it's in order, I'd like to bring up my A1 amendment.
Would you like to ask your questions first or move your amendment?
No, I'd like to ask a few questions. And the first, a couple of questions really are to the bill. For Commissioner Tenbrook. I don't really identify that there is a definition for short-term housing or short-term housing facilities. And so just as a point of clarity, is there a definition or is there a quantitative or qualitative measure that we are specifying in that definition itself?
Commissioner Tenbrook?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, if it's a question about in the bill itself, I think I need to refer that to Representative Hassan or to Zach. Is that the question?
Thank you, Commissioner Tenbrook. Mr. Eichten?
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright for the question. There is not a definition in the bill for short-term housing. Short-term housing is meant to be broad in this sense so that we can look at what the local needs are in local communities. So a short-term housing facility might mean congregate setting. It might mean it's something more small scale, like purchasing a duplex, something that is regionally specific, culturally specific, that providers that are administering these grants would be able to focus on.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question probably is for Mr. Eichten or possibly the commissioner. But if the goal of this bill is to provide grants to existing providers, or is it for an appropriation to DHS to direct to directly fund housing projects or facilities? Which is it?
Mr. Eichten?
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright. This bill would direct money to DHS to be able to appropriate cash to help increase the supply. So that does give them some latitude on how exactly they would administer that. I would look to the department if they have a clarifying thought on that.
Commissioner Tenbrook?
Yes, and I will defer to the Department of Human Services staff who's on. I don't know if France Renathis or others.
Hi.
Introduce yourself to the committee and state your name for the record.
Yes, Francie Mathis, Department of Human Services, the Office of Economic Opportunity. Representative Schultz and Albright, I would envision that funding would come to us and we would do some outreach to ensure that across the state providers know the funding is available, exactly what the funding is and the parameters, and then would likely do an RFP and review that in accordance with the state rules and award the funding from there.
Thank you, Ms. Mathis. Representative Albright?
Yeah, and Ms. Mathis, then, in terms of that, since we're not using existing grant programs, I would expect that there would be a cost for DHS to administer this funding. Can you articulate what you expect that cost to be?
Ms. Mathis?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I would expect that because we have staff who do funding for services, but funding for facilities is outside of of our experience, and so we would look to hire one FTE for that position.
Thank you, Ms. Mathis. Representative Albright, would you like to move your A1 amendment now?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Do you want to speak to your amendment, and then we can?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hassan, I really do appreciate that you brought this forward. I too share the concerns that you have for homelessness. And I think your testifiers have done a very, very good job of actually reinforcing the particulars of the amendment before us. As we all know, homelessness isn't just an issue that is metro. It's really across Minnesota. And as your testifiers actually reinforced the notion, it's a statewide issue. In fact, according to a recent the Minnesota homeless study that was done by Wilder in 2018, you know, the population of people suffering from homelessness is actually greater in Minnesota and growing faster than in the metro. And so this bill really goes towards that. And what my amendment, I hope that you will consider it a friendly amendment. Is really motivated to ensure that statewide funding, or state funding issues, I should say, is going to address the issues of all the regions in the state, and it is of a statewide nature so that there is, in a sense, a reinforcement, as Chair Moran said, of the equity lens in terms of making sure that everyone has an opportunity to receive a benefit from this amendment. And I'm happy to stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright, can you specify what the amendment actually does? How does it change the appropriation?
So on line 1 point, excuse me, I've got to look for it here. Let me pull up the bill. It actually just inserts on line 9, before the period, it inserts and equitable geographic distribution of funds.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Do members have any questions for Representative Albright? Representative Sandel?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. Would that mean a simple division of the money from county to county, or would it take in consideration the incidence of homelessness in different counties?
Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Sandel. Thank you for the question, because I think just as you said, in an affluent neighborhood such as you represent or as I represent, there are pockets of, you know, and not to be derogatory by saying pockets, but there is homelessness regardless of the district that you serve. And it isn't just a metro area. I consider myself homegrown. I grew up just south of Mankato, and as the testifier said, Mankato, St. Peter, Montevideo, New Ulm, up into the Moorhead area. These areas also are needful of representation. So the equitable distribution is open-ended, but it just articulates the fact that we recognize that all portions of the state should be represented by this appropriation, and it isn't just a metro-centric issue. And it's more statement, but I do think that it sends a message that we're looking out for everyone across the state. But thank you for the question.
Representative Albright. Representative Hassan, would you like to comment on the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. I think we agree on this one, that you know, homelessness is not a metro issue. It's a statewide issue. And this is a friendly amendment. I will accept it. And thank you for bringing up the issue.
Thank you, Representative Albright. We move to a vote, if that's all right with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to do a roll call vote. So, Ms. Hassan, can you prepare the roll call vote?
Absolutely.
Representative Albright moves the A1 amendment to House File 21, and please proceed with the roll call vote.
Chair Schultz.
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Knorr?
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz, that's 19 ayes and 0 nays.
Okay, the amendment is adopted, members. So House File 21 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. So thank you, members. Now we are going to proceed. We have 30 minutes left. Let's see if we can do this. House File 42, the action is I'm going to make a motion to approve the division report from Preventing Homelessness. This is a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion adopted. So Representative Howard, I'll move House File 21 to be heard, House File 42 to be heard in front of the committee. So I move the House File 42 is now in front of us. I'm sorry, yeah. Representative Howard, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try to be brief because we've already had some testimony on this bill. And I'm presuming a fair amount of support because we're back here passing a, hopefully, moving forward a bill that on a bipartisan basis, we chose to move forward back in March when this pandemic began. And that's where I want to start my testimony, that in March on a bipartisan basis, as the pandemic was beginning to unfold, we made the wise decision together to take care of our most vulnerable Minnesotans, because we know that keeping our most vulnerable Minnesotans safe, keep all Minnesotans safe. And so we invested in the ESP program to help our unsheltered population be safe and not be in congregate settings that would increase the spread. And by and large, as a result, this has saved lives. Back when we approved these funds in March, we didn't know the course of the virus. Clearly, the virus is still very much a clear and present danger, yet the funds that supported these efforts have largely dried up. So we need to come together again to make an investment. And really, it feels like in terms of our COVID response, this is about job number one, to make sure that our most vulnerable Minnesotans are safe. And I look forward to your support and would invite some of my testifiers to share their comments quickly this morning.
Thank you, Representative Howard. I have Jordan May. Please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jordan May. I am the executive director of the Red Light Homeless Shelter, and I am a person that has lived experience being homeless. I'll try to keep it quick. Currently, we are using some of the ESP funding to put people into a hotel right now, because our shelters are constantly full right now. So what we did was put people into the shelter. We hired staff to help them navigate the process in order to transition them as quickly as they can get into housing. And we actually developed the housing support program at the same time, so then we can transition them into that program so they can get into their own housing. Currently, you know, there is not enough vacancy in housing stock in Beltrami County, you know, especially with the line three coming. And then currently right now, my emergency shelter is shut down due to COVID because I had an outbreak with staff. You know, speaking of the navigation center, we actually bought some of the structures, and we're actually creating a new emergency shelter for single adults for that, but that is not going to be operational for another month or two. But currently, we are putting everybody up into hotels right now, and I have 30, 35 people that are in hotels right now, and I'm actually utilizing those ESP funds. And if I did not have those funds right now, those people would not have nowhere to go because I do not have the emergency shelter beds operational at the moment. And up here, on the reservation, the weather gets really bad. And right now, those people would be, outside. And who would know? Some of them, could pass away due to winter exposure. So, we administer a lot of different several grants. So that's why I'm advocating for, House Files 2142 and especially 315 so we can absolutely get the funding that we need so we can transition the people as quickly as we can to the housing that they need and get them the ongoing case management, the wraparound services and everything that they need in order so they can become self-sufficient and stay housed.
Thank you, Director May, for your testimony. The next testifier is Amber Holstrom. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and then proceed.
Good morning, Chair Schultz and committee members. I'm Amber Holstrom with West Central Minnesota Communities Action in rural Minnesota. Our agency manages several different programs ranging everywhere from energy assistance to Head Start to several different housing programs, including ESP. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 42 and 315 for ongoing funding of ESP and COVID relief package, including funding for ESP. Our agency utilized ESP dollars to create a program called Launchpad within the last couple of years. Launchpad consists of two units of a duplex that we rent for homeless clients to utilize as a temporary shelter with very intensive case management attached to it. Case management for these clients includes, but is not limited to, housing searches, employment searches, resume building, program referrals, assistance with benefit applications such as cash assistance, transportation needs, budgeting, and whatever else they may need. The units that we have are fully furnished and are at no cost to the households that we serve. Everything is provided to them down to cleaning supplies and personal hygiene items. The average time clients stay on this program is 45 days, and although the program is new, we've had all successful exit at this time. We've partnered with a couple of local churches and different groups in town that provide hot meals to the clients when they move in. They provide frozen meals for them to put in the freezer, and the food shelf is also paired with us so that they don't have to worry about food when they first move in there. As we know, SNAP can be rather difficult sometimes when somebody does not have an address. Being in rural Minnesota, we do not have an actual shelter of any form in any of our counties and solely rely on our ESG hotel vouchers for any other type of homeless assistance. Although hotel vouchers are wonderful, they do not provide the stability or length of stays that our ESP dollars can. Homelessness has been at crisis levels before COVID-19, and it will only be more extreme after COVID and the emergency peacetime order is lifted. Our ESP dollars are spent on staffing, operations, and costs associated with Launchpad, such as the rent of the units and utilities and client support service dollars to help the clients with gas cards, bus passes. We've even helped individuals reinstate their licenses, whatever it is that they need to get on their feet and locate employment and whatever else. We need ESP funds to keep this program going and expand, especially when it's truly needed most. We need to keep our homeless families safe. We need to house those fleeing domestic violence. We need to provide shelter and support to those who have lost hope and give them a hand up so they don't completely fall down. One of our first households on our Launchpad program gave me permission to share her story with you today. She was too nervous and uncomfortable to present to a group of individuals, but did provide me with all of the needed information. Debbie was a single woman when she came to us of almost 60 years of age. Almost a year ago, she lost her housing and was unable to afford new housing. Her hours were cut at her place of employment due to the start of COVID, and she was barely getting by in life. She had burned bridges staying with the small amount of family and friends that she had. Affordable housing within our communities is already very hard to find, and even more so during the pandemic. Most subsidized units in Alexandria, our biggest town in our counties, are at roughly a two-year wait list and longer for single individuals. She resorted to living out of her vehicle. Her employer was made aware of the situation and made a referral to our agency. Launchpad provided her with a place to stay to save money for a new place to call home. West Central staff assisted her in doing housing searches and apply for rentals. She was approved for a subsidized unit in one of our neighboring communities with the help of our staff. She stated that without our ESP program, she would not be where she is today. The consistent check-ins, reminders, resources, and assistance with everyday tasks pushed her to want to do better and have a place to call her own. Having a place of her own was important to her because it meant that she was not out on the streets, living in her car, or staying at her son's place. It gave her the opportunity to feel like she was living a safe and better life. Stable housing is the most important thing in a person's life because you don't have a place to go home at night. You feel like you literally have nothing. Debbie quoted, Launchpad has given me a reason to believe there are still good people and agencies out there who are willing to help under any circumstance. I was provided a place to sleep at night, which is ultimately the only thing that I needed during my experience of homelessness. I wish that West Central Community Action had the opportunity to build more Launchpads, as they are very needed in the community. And as cliche as it sounds, there is truly no place like home. It's stories like this that we see and hear every day. We have never gone a single day in our agency without having a household to put into our Launchpad units. We have them filled the second that somebody moves out. Debbie provided us with a success story because of our ESP funds. If we are able to receive more funding and consistent funding, we could have so many more success stories and hopefully eventually reduce the amount of homeless households we serve. If we did not receive this ESP dollars, there is a good possibility that Launchpad will eventually fall and a much needed program will no longer be available. Again, this is why I'm testifying in support of House File 42 and 315. Shelter saves lives, housing ends homelessness. I just want to thank you all for your time and for giving me the time to speak with you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Ms. Holstrom, for your testimony. I see that we have an amendment. Representative Albright, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move the A1 amendment. And Representative Howard, much like I reported with Representative Hassan's bill, please consider this amendment friendly. We're all very concerned about our state budget, particularly in a time where revenues are a bit volatile and we're facing a deficit in the tails. What this bill and this amendment to the bill does is it ensures that if and when federal money comes to Minnesota, we refund the general fund and pay for those activities with the federal dollars. Now, many of these activities have been funded by federal money from the CARES Act over the past several months. I don't think that we should have any issue continuing to cover these costs with federal dollars, especially when we're contemplating and thinking about how to cover our state's budget deficit. Members, we've got to be very smart stewards of the state budget. What this amendment does is ensures that very fact, and I would urge Representative Howard to consider this a friendly amendment and urge members' support.
Representative Howard, would you like to comment on A1?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. I really understand the intent here with this amendment, and I think there are some issues with the specific language of the amendment and want to keep working with you and the committee and stakeholders on those, but I'm happy to include the amendment today, and I hope we can continue working on specific language as we move forward.
Okay, members. So Representative Albright renews his motion to amend with the A1 amendment, House File 42. We're going to move to a roll call vote. Ms. Hansen?
Yes. Chair Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Pass.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Oh, Fisher passed. Frederick, aye. Sorry. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Knorr?
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Thank you. Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz has 18 ayes and one pass.
The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to say to the testifiers we had earlier, I appreciate their testimony and also very much appreciate the hard work that they're doing every day and working with folks experiencing homelessness. The thing that I want to point out is that while we're seeing the problem right now much more because of COVID, these are problems that are continuing on a daily basis, that whether we have COVID or not. And I think the state needs to make a permanent commitment to providing these funds going forward. Having had the opportunity to work with and supporting a number of youth who were homeless this past summer, a number of their conditions were not from COVID. It was because in one instance, a person was thrown out of their house because she was pregnant by somebody who was of African American descent. I ran into other youth who were tossed out of their homes because they were identifying with GLBTQ. And I think the supportive services that are provided through here are commitments that we need to make from the state so that we can continue to support people who are in these situations so that they can be successful down the road. And I don't think these dollars should go away after COVID is over, that we should be making this commitment going forward. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Fisher. So I will, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion, House File 42, possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Howard. Representative Sandell, do you have a question?
Thank you. Just a quick comment, Madam Chair. I know the issue of housing is an issue of the banking industry as well. And I know that there are individual banks for sure, and probably others throughout the industry who would be very eager to work with the nonprofits and probably with the state agency in trying to resolve the issue in their communities. And I would encourage those who are working on this issue to pursue that possibility with their local banks. And I think the response might be positive. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Sandell. Members, we have one more bill before us. This is House File 315. Representative Howard, do you want to speak to your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can be brief because Representative Fisher kind of gave my speech for House File 315. This bill would provide stable funding in the long term to address our unsheltered needs, our homelessness needs, because as Representative Fisher noted, we were facing a crisis before COVID began. Just between 2019 and 2020, we saw a 50% increase in homelessness. In those numbers, we saw an increase all across the state, as this committee has discussed. We believe providing a base rate funding increase for the ESP program, which is really our only state fund that invests dollars to do this work all across our state, is the wise move for us in our continued work to end homelessness in Minnesota. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I forgot to move the bill, so I move House File 315 so we can take it up in this committee. Do you have one more testifier, Representative Howard?
If we have time, I think we do have one more testifier.
We do have some time, and I have on the list Christine Bridgman. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Christine Bridgman, and I am the program manager of Catholic Charities Higher Ground Minneapolis Shelter. I'm joining you from my shelter bunk area. We are open 24/7 in response to COVID, but it's our cleaning and sanitation time within the sleeping area, so our roughly 100 shelter guests are in other parts of the building right now. As you can see behind me, I have the lockers, which were installed this spring, which was pretty exciting. And then we look down, we have 120 bunks in here, but we're only sleeping 65 at this time due to COVID. Before COVID, we sheltered close to 250 men a night and up to 275 on our coldest nights. We were never meant to shelter the 275 men at night, but it is the job of emergency shelter to save lives. We believe that an emergency shelter is, if it is needed in a person's life, It should be a short experience as possible, and it should be a place to help that person get back onto a better path. We cannot achieve these expectations without public support. Since before COVID, shelters have been trying to serve more and more people with increasingly complex needs. We are seeing more elderly and people with disabilities. Mental health needs are getting harder to support. To keep shelter stays rare and brief, we need to be able to connect a person to the right programs, get them health care they need, or to find family members. This is challenging to do every day with 100 men, let alone 275. We struggled to meet the needs of COVID, and it will only get harder after. We will see even more people out of work, limited housing options, struggling with health issues, and more. When shelters are underfunded, the most at risk in our communities lose access to critical services, which puts increased strain on our public safety and emergency healthcare systems. COVID has shown that emergency services programs are critical, and its flexibility makes it really good at what we do. It can be the difference between emergency shelter being a turning point in a person's path towards something good or just a dead end. You are all here because you want Minnesotans to be successful. Shelters like ours are ground zero for connecting thousands of Minnesotans to the resources they support. Neither your work nor mine is as successful as it needs to. Without increased public funding support, neither your work nor mine will be successful. Please support House File 315 and a permanent and meaningful increase to the emergency services program. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Bridgman. Representative Howard, any closing comments on the bill?
No, Madam Chair. I would just appreciate support from the committee.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a point of clarification for Representative Howard, if you could just quickly remind us. So in 2019, we've appropriated a substantial amount of money that didn't go into the TAILS. DHS has also expended a lot of money on grants, you know, between April and December of last year. This would be the first time that we're actually increasing money to the base. I think it's, as I know, about $7.5 million. To the point that I'm hoping that you can help clarify for the members of the committee, this is one of many grant programs to address housing. And in the time remaining, could you give us a Reader's Digest version in terms of the programs that are already existent? And maybe Mr. Eichten or others would be supplemental to this. But I think what we need to appreciate is the breadth of the programs that are available to support homelessness, to support emergency services, and how this ties into that safety net, if you will. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's a very big question, Representative Albright. I don't know if Representative Howard has all the information in front of him, but I'll let him respond.
I'm sure he's up to the challenge.
Thanks, Madam Chair, Representative Albright. It is a big question. I will say for this bill in particular, in terms of funding to support our shelters and the work that they do, this is the program that accomplishes that goal. And with the need growing across the state, it's very much warranted to provide a base level funding increase as the needs grow.
Representative Albright.
Nothing further, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions. So this bill, House File 315, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. Members, I want to thank Representatives Hassan and Howard for bringing these really important bills to our committee, and hopefully we can have the resources available to fund initiatives to address those who are unsheltered and homeless. So thank you again. Members, we will hear more bills next Tuesday. Look for your emails for the agenda. It will also be posted on our committee website. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.